Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. UK scientists get the go-ahead to start gene editing. But first, James, let's just talk about the freakout known as Zika. I discussed this a little bit on my morning show this morning and just went through a lot of the headlines that seemed to not add up to making a lot of sense here. And this seems like it's a story where everyone's sort of rushing in and we don't really know what we're all rushing into. Fools rush in, as the saying would go. So we can just look at some of the headlines, James, and you can see that while Brazil is literally busting down private doors to fight the Zika outbreak, you've also got Thailand saying, yeah, no big deal. Washington Post is asking the question, why isn't Zika causing birth defects in Colombia? And you have a lot of people in the alternative media. You got John Rappaport talking about kind of the fudge numbers. And if you break this down, it's like, what, there's 17 people? What is it, 270 at most that have this virus? But you don't really hear that in the fear-mongering. You see the amazing, frightening photos of guys in jumpsuits and gas masks and haze and everything. And it looks like something out of a horror film. So even Russia Today and even our friend Claire Burnish talking about the really interesting correlation is, and I think, James, we probably talked about it here on New World Next Week, you know, those GM mosquitoes that they unleashed, you know, to fight diseases. That's the same place that seems to be the centralized location of this outbreak. And the strangest thing about it altogether, James, is it looks like the Zika virus could be purchased online from our good friends at the Rockefeller Foundation. So there's a lot of interesting, strange things going on. But one, it just looks like another pandemic freakout. James, I thought we were all going to be dead by Ebola by this time. Or was it, swine flu before that? Or any number of invented freakouts and the big pharma companies are rushing. Don't worry, we're going to make a vaccine. No money, you know, from all your countries is too small to spend taxpayer money to try and push this forward and martial law and all of those things. Is this turned into a big, huge conspiracy bait thing, James?
It's certainly looking that way. And I mean, there's a lot of, as you say, people rushing in without perhaps due diligence. I mean, for example, the GM mosquito story is interesting. But for the record, and for what it's worth, Oxitec has pointed out that their trial field site is 400 kilometers, I think, from where the Zika strain broke out. And the strain broke out months before the GM mosquito testing started, and it's they're only GM mosquitoing males that don't bite, so they can't transfer this virus, theoretically. Again, you could say Oxitec is full of it, but I would like some proof of that. I mean, I would like something to go on to actually connect these things rather than just start speculating, because as of you and me, when we start assuming, right? And the, of course, again, I think people are going to bring up this, you know, patent thing as if it's really relevant in the exact same way the Ebola, Ebobun or whatever was patented. And again, I think that was a false lead, a blind alley, because, yeah, lots and lots of diseases are patented. And the official reason, officially, is that they patent it so that some company can't come in and patent it and then charge people bajillions of dollars for researching on it. That's at least the official explanation. Again, maybe it's full of it, and trust me, if there is anyone who hates the Rockefeller Foundation on the planet more than I do, and everything that they represent, I'd like to meet that person. But I don't see any reason for believing that this is all this, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation patented this disease, and then now we're releasing it. Is it even the same strain that they use? Again, no research whatsoever into that, just people running away with this story. So I think Rappaport is probably on the right track here. Talking about the microcephaly, everyone knows microcephaly, it's causing this neurological disorder in babies. And they're talking about 4,000 babies, and it's this pandemic, and whoa, my God. But yeah, as he breaks down the numbers, well, only 200 and some odd of them have been confirmed, and there's been no confirmation of any connection between the Zika virus and the microcephaly. They're just speculating about that connection right now, and that speculation has led to all of this. So I think that's extremely important. So I'm going to be talking to John Rappaport on the Corbett Report tomorrow, so I hope people tune into that. And I'm going to be writing about this on the week on the weekend for my subscriber newsletter editorial, because I think probably one of the most important things about this is the World Health Organization stepping in and declaring a public health emergency of international concern, exactly like they did with Ebola, exactly like they did with swine flu. Every time there's any pretext for it, the WHO will swoop in and try to push that envelope a little further to create the space for medical martial law. So I think that's important. Again, regardless of where this is coming from, whether it's real or it's just being hyped up, you know, regardless of who started it or whatever, the WHO is going to swoop in and try to scoop up as much power, you know, medical martial law type powers as they can. So I think that's probably where this story is most fruitfully explored. I'd love to see more information if people have more details about this, but I think, again, people are just running off with some wild speculation, and it's probably going to come back to bite people in the ass when they turn out to be wrong.
So one of the other areas, I guess, James, would be that all of this is just some kind of smokescreen for something else that we have no idea about that hasn't entered into the scenario. So any number of areas. But I think what you hit on right there with the World Health Organization even reminds me of what happens in your local cities and towns when there's bad storms or natural disasters or things. When you hear your governor has declared a state of emergency, they do that because it kicks in all of those things that have been passed, and it kicks in all of that money, and it kicks in all of those procedures, and it kicks out all those sort of standard operating procedures and say, oh no, it's a state of emergency. And just as you noted there, James, it's sort of, well, all those other rules that you thought you followed, we throw those out and we've now followed this new book. And of course, as we've said for many, many years, they're really quick to call for the state of emergency, but very, very slow, if ever, to rescind those emergency measures, James. And John Rappaport is a good guy. He's been covering these kind of stories for a long, long time, and I had the pleasure of talking to him myself a couple of times. Let's move to our second big story this week, James, on New World Next Week, episode 257, Negative Interest Rates Show the Desperation of Central Banks. And we take this from Washington's blog, Japan has now joined the EU, Denmark, Switzerland, and Sweden in imposing negative interest rates. Just the brief explanation, you know, when you have some money in the bank and you may make a nickel out of that for a little while, flip that around, they're going to charge you for having money in the bank. Now, at first, we're not actually talking about the plebs like you and me. It's more for the businesses, but it'll all trickle down, if you will. So more than a fifth of the world's gross domestic product is now covered by a central bank with negative interest rates. So the Wall Street Journal notes about Japan's central bank stunning markets last Friday by setting the country's first negative interest rates in a desperate attempt to keep the economy from sliding back into the stagnation that has dogged it much for the last two decades. The BBC says the country is desperate to increase spending and investment. They've even been desperate to boost consumer spending for years, at one point even issuing shopping vouchers to stimulate demand, which even makes me just think of George Bush telling you to just go out there and shop. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports moving to negative rates reflects a measure of desperation on the part of the central banks, their traditional tools largely exhausted as most countries' interest rates have been pushed to almost nothing. And MarketWatch's William Watts says this might not be the sort of capitulation stock market investors were anticipating. And James, there are some other articles that speak about how this was pushed through by, and the name escapes me, I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically is the guy who likes to pull big shocking moves there at the Bank of Japan, I believe. They're referring to this sort of as his torpedo. And again, I don't have those notes right in front of me right now.
Hirohiko Kuroda.
Kuroda, yeah. So I think they're calling this like Kuroda's torpedoes, and that was a shocking move. And he enjoys doing these kind of shocking moves. So just wrapping up this piece from Washington's blog, negative interest rates will eventually come to America. Central bankers are implementing negative interest rates to force savers to buy assets so as to artificially stimulate the economy. So specifically, a negative interest rate means the central bank and perhaps private banks will charge negative interest. Instead of receiving money on deposits, depositors must pay regularly to keep their money with the bank. This is intended to incentivize banks to lend more money freely and businesses and individuals to invest, lend, and spend money rather than pay that pesky fee to keep it safe. Now, James, you've been doing a bunch of work on the war on cash, and this is happening right there in Japan.
Right. And these are related concepts, the war on cash and negative interest rates, because as other people have pointed out, if they do actually pass this down to the consumer level, so they're actually charging you to park money at the bank, which they're not yet. This is still just central bank money that's being parked by banks at the central bank. But if it did filter down to consumer level, people would be taking their money out, trying to, you know, take the cash and stuff it under a mattress, because then they wouldn't be charged for holding the money. And so if you have a cashless society, well, people can't do that. You know, whatever happens in the bank to your money, what can you do? You can pull it out and put it in another bank, but it's the same thing. So that's part of what this cashless society agenda is about. That's partly why central banks are going into a tizzy right now, coming out left, right, and center, talking about the end of cash. We got to get rid of cash. So that's part of that. But yes, this is an interesting move. As you say, it was a surprise, specifically because I remember reading just maybe a week before this move actually came, the Bank of Japan was saying, nope, we're not going to, no negative interest rates, no, nothing like that. And then, surprise, negative interest rates. So yes, they are trying to surprise and shock the markets and trying to pull out really the last tool in their toolbox. I mean, a bizarre and ridiculous tool that didn't exist fundamentally until, you know, a year or two ago when that started happening in Europe. And this is a sign, I think, it really is a sign of desperation in a sense, because what we have here is the central banks, and then the banks, which kind of comprise and dictate and really kind of puppeteer the central banks. The big banks are not going to be hurt by these kinds of moves, because if anything, if we learned anything from the 2008 global financial crisis, it's that the governments and central banks will do anything to prop up the big banks. They will do anything to bail them out and to prop them up and to make sure they don't go under. Really, this is kind of a move that is going to affect the smaller regional banks here in Japan more so than any of the big banks. And I think that's perhaps part of the agenda, consolidating control and winnowing out some of the lower hanging fruit in the banking world, and sacrificing some banks to the you know, public interest, and for the greater interest of the banks, the bigger banks, of course. So I think that's part of the agenda that's going on here. Part of it is they've blown up this huge QE bubble over the last 7-8 years, and what are you going to do? How are you going to keep it going? What can you possibly do? Oh, okay, all right, we'll start charging people not to send this money out through the economy. So the banks will have to find more customers to lend to. They'll just have to start moving it through. I think it is a sign of desperation in a lot of ways, because they just want to keep this debt bubble growing. It's not going to, I think. I think we are reaching the limits of this, but how, when, and in what way that's going to collapse and blow up is going to be interesting to watch. And I might have a front row seat, so stay tuned.
And they are basically, you ask, how's this going to look? Well, they're running simulations to see how this may look. I've got a few more headlines here. Federal Reserve testing how banks would handle negative rates. As this is Bloomberg, as interest rates turn negative around the world, the Fed's asking banks to consider the possibility of the same happening in the U.S., In its annual stress test for 2016, the Fed said it will assess the resilience of big banks to a number of possible situations, including one where the rate on the 3-month U.S. Treasury bill stays below zero for a prolonged period. So this is a little boring, but interesting to note. The severely adverse scenario is characterized by a severe global recession, accompanied by a period of heightened corporate financial stress and negative yields for short-term U.S. Treasury securities. In that particular simulation, the unemployment rate doubles to 10%, 10% double, the same level it reached in the aftermath of the last financial crisis. But in the stress test, banks would have to handle 3-month bill rates entering negative territory in the second quarter of 2016. So, James, just in this hypothetical scenario, second quarter of 2016, things are going to tank possibly worse than what we're already seeing it happen in real life. They're running the simulations for that possibly happening and holding through the first quarter of 2019. So again, these are just stress tests. This is just a drill being run by the Federal Reserve. Our buddy Dan Dix actually just tweeted a few minutes before we went to air here, Canada looking at negative interest rates as well. So you've pretty much got it coming back to North America. And as if all of that wasn't enough, how about iris scanners coming soon to your automated teller machine, James? I think those are all of our financial notes that we can handle, and perhaps that sort of sets the stage for our third and final story this week on New World Next Week. UK scientists get the gene editing go-ahead, and we'll take this from just plain old BBC. UK scientists have been given the go-ahead by the fertility regulator to genetically modify human embryos. It's the first time a country has considered the DNA-altering technique in embryos and approved it. The research will take place at the Francis Crick Institute in London and aims to provide a deeper understanding of the earliest moments of human life. It will be illegal for the scientists to implant the modified embryos into a woman. But the field is attracting controversy over concerns it is opening the door to designer or GM babies. In a world first last year, scientists in China announced they'd carried out gene editing in human embryos to correct a gene that causes a blood disorder. Now, this new work will be led by Dr. Kathy Nayakan, who spent a decade researching human development. The regulator, the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority, HFEA, has given its approval, and the experiment could start in the next few months. Meanwhile, James Dr. David King, the director of Human Genetics Alert, said, quote, "This research will allow the scientists to refine the techniques for creating GM babies, and many of the government's scientific advisors have already decided that they are in favor of allowing that." So this is the first step in a well-mapped-out process leading to GM babies and a future of consumer eugenics. Now, James, a little bit of that is probably down-speaking a little bit. It's probably a little worse than that. This isn't the first step. It's kind of a long plan, isn't it?
Yeah, but of course they're not going to come out and just start offering this to consumers. I mean, that has to be brought in, so people have to be conditioned to accept it. And this is one of those stories, like robots automating us out of the workforce, that I don't know if there is a solution to this per se. It's one of those things, it's technology, it exists, it's going to be used. I mean, let's not be naive about this. How do you put that genie back in the bottle? How do you put the toothpaste back in the tube? It's out there. There are people who are going to want this. There are people who are going to be able to afford to do this. And they're going to try to, you know, create the super race of, you know, elite billionaires and their billionaire babies, designer babies. And how's the average person going to compete with this? These are questions I do not have answers to, by the way. I genuinely don't know. How do you put the toothpaste back in the tube?
I don't have the answer to that myself. All I then suddenly like flip is to films. I think there's a Jared Leto film called Mr. Nobody, where he's kind of the last normal guy in a world of everyone else that's been genetically engineered. I can't help but also think of Idiocracy, when the woman's kicking and banging on the Carl's Jr. machine, but she doesn't have money, and they've, you know, scanned her retina to know that. And when she gets aggro, they spray her with gas and tell her children have now been placed in protective custody of Carl's Jr., of course. These are, I think, the scenarios that we're kind of looking at, and that's comical, and it reaches those kind of ridiculous proportions, but all of those things exist. Hi. Shall we mention some bit of good news?
Please.
The latest episode of Good News Next Week went up just a little bit ago, and I got the cover story from Mr. James Corbett. Candidate changes name to Z None of the comma above to place him at the bottom of a ballot coming up in Canada. I go over that and a couple of other good news, positive ways we are winning stories on the latest episode of Good News Next Week. If you've got good news, please send it to us at hashtag Good News Next Week. And if you've got the other bad news we're following, use hashtag New World Next Week, like the CIA intentionally deceiving its own workforce about operations with what they term eyewash. Meanwhile, Google delivers the wrong search results to would-be jihadis. Georgia mayor arrested for impersonating a police officer while smoking weed. And an ex-NYPD cop ran a tri-state prostitution ring. James, those are just some bits of the non-stop hypocrisy we're faced with on a daily basis. And in some ways, I think we try and look at a little bit of good news and just keep learning our way forward, I guess. That's the best I got for you.
It's an ugly job, but someone has to do it, so that's what we're here for. And let me just throw in an unsolicited plug. We didn't talk about this, but I want to direct people to Morning Monarchy. That is the podcast that I have been missing for a very long time, since Media Monarchy podcast original version got, you know, scuttled. This is an excellent podcast. It's the morning headlines. I mean, it's exactly what I'm looking for. So people who haven't checked it out, please do so.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That means a lot. And it's really like it hits exactly, I think kind of what my strengths are. And hopefully I think a lot of what people want. And it is still that kind of, that hopefully kind of fear-free atmosphere where we can look at what's going on in the world and hopefully come to better conclusions and we can make better decisions. James, I appreciate it so much, buddy.
Awesome. Well, let's talk again next week.
All right. Take care.